Buckmaster Show. This portion of the program presented by our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. They do just a really great job, the tourism people over there, promoting one of the most beautiful areas of the southwestern United States. In fact, I was Bob Dio, our engineer producer, was sharing with me before we went on the air today that he and his wife have heard me talk about Silver City in Grant County, and they're going to try it out. And this happens a lot. A lot of our listeners have never been over there. They have a great experience, only 3-hour drive from Tucson. And here's the good news. It's 15 degrees cooler in that area. Now, the reason for that is the elevation. It's kind of like the same elevation as Denver, about a mile high, anywhere from about 5,500 to 6,500 feet. So this time of year, you get some real pleasant, mild days, and then the nights really cool down. So check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org, all the places to stay and the many things to do in Silver City. Well, in his new best-selling book, author Alexander Klimberg writes that we are not nearly as worried as we should be about internet-born mayhem in our increasingly interconnected world. The book is titled The Darkening Web, and the thesis is that the internet, conceived as a tool for advancing freedom, now puts democratic societies at risk. Joining me in studio is Tucson-based attorney Kathy Winger, who specializes in data security and represents companies, banks, credit unions, and individuals in commercial and corporate transactions. She is one of the most in-demand speakers on the topic of cybersecurity. Her speech that she gives, and she's always available and willing to talk to groups here in town. It's titled Cybersecurity and Data Breaches from a Business Lawyer's Perspective. Kathy, welcome back to the show. We had you on a couple of months ago, didn't have enough time, so this time I've budgeted pretty much 25 minutes with you so we can kind of dive deep, as they say. Good to see you.
It's good to see you too, Bill. Thanks for having me back.
What did you think of the review on Mr. Klimberg's book? I find it fascinating, this darkening web, and about some of the history that our own military in developing kind of tools to combat cybersecurity, the hackers got some of this information.
Yes, that's exactly right. And, you know, this was interesting for me, too, because as I mentioned when I spoke to you about this before, mm-hmm. I tend to look at cybersecurity from the perspective of my clients. I'm a business attorney, and I look at it as what kind of risk my clients are dealing with in the cyber arena. This article and this book, which I was able to skim through a bit as well, really looks at cybersecurity from the offensive perspective and where things stand from an offensive perspective and what's happening. And that was interesting to me. I don't focus a lot on that. So it was kind of fascinating to read what the author had to say about it. I've looked at some other articles in the area that are similar. And again, I'm left where I unfortunately am always left in this area, as there are more questions than answers. But in terms of cyber warfare, it's really offensive as opposed to cybersecurity, or what this gentleman says in his book. He calls it information security, which is defensive. So this is really a focus on offensive and the government's involvement in it. But one of the things that's unique about cybersecurity, whether it's offensive or defensive, is businesses and individuals are involved as well. It can't just be the government, and it isn't just the government because of the internet and how free and open it is and how widely used it is. So really, it's important to understand what's going on the offensive front just as much as what's going on the defensive front.
And since we last talked, there were these cyber attacks in May and June that shut down hospitals. This was really a bad situation in the United Kingdom, and it carried over to some areas here in the United States. ATMs were affected in the Ukraine, railways in Germany, tens of thousands of other targets around the globe where this malware was basically holding individuals and companies as a ransom.
And a couple things about that. One of the things that I learned in reading the book was that the virus or the malware that they used for that attack had been originally developed by the United States government as an offensive cyber tool. And through hacking, bad actors were able to get a hold of it, whether they're government actors or state actors or private actors were able to get a hold of it and use it in a way that caused harm. It causes harm, and it caused harm not only to governments but to private businesses. So it's a perfect example of the interplay between private businesses and government and state actors and how that's going to be sorted out, and an example of malware or malicious code that was originally used for purposes really of national security that got into the wrong hands and was able to be used against the country and against other countries as well. And then the third thing about that attack, which I thought was interesting, and again played up the connection between the government and private industry in this area, what that malware did was exploit vulnerabilities in Microsoft systems. Mm-hmm. So the government knew how to exploit the vulnerabilities and use those vulnerabilities to formulate the malicious code. Well, you have Microsoft involved in it because it's their system and their vulnerabilities. So you have a private industry with a product that they produced that had vulnerabilities that the government was then able to turn around and use on a national security basis, and that bad actors were then able to get a hold of and use to attack other countries. And in the process, of course, businesses are going to be affected. Banks, if ATMs are affected, banks are affected. Hospitals, all sorts of businesses were affected. So it really is a perfect example of the interplay between offensive cybersecurity, defensive cybersecurity, the government, and private businesses, and how they can all sort of get thrown into the pot.
And this malicious computer code was developed, as you say, by the U.S. National Security Agency, and the CIA was involved. So then it gets in the wrong hands. And, you know, you mentioned banks and Microsoft. What about liability for these big companies?
Well, and I talked about that a little bit before. That's sort of my soapbox that I stand up on and talk about cybersecurity. And when I give my presentation, that's really my focus, is what exposure do companies have in this area? I may have mentioned this before, but I originally started talking about it because of my concern for the types of clients that I deal with and their exposure, and because of the fact that there is real exposure. And so in this area, the exposure would be the same, because you have, even though the information, the malware, the malicious code was gotten into the hands of and used by hackers, so it wasn't legally obtained and their system was hacked, there's still exposure for the companies whose system got hacked through their customers and regulators and parties who shared their information with the company, and then their information fell into the wrong hands. So they have exposure that was in essence not created for that purpose, but the exposure is still there. And that's one of the things that's important for me to get an idea to get across to businesses, to understand that it's there. And I saw a great analogy in reading an article that was similar to this. It talked about the interplay between government and private businesses and talked about the fact that neither party could be completely responsible. So, and the analogy that I liked because it was simple to understand was the government expects Walmart to lock its doors,
right,
you know,
right.
And to, you can't just be completely lackadaisical about it and say, well, you know, this was the government.
You have to bear some responsibility. You can't leave the door wide open.
That's right. But on the other hand, the government doesn't expect private businesses to negotiate with state actors over cyber events.
Right.
So it really is the interplay of both of them, but the exposure for businesses is there. And having it be offensive or defensive or the government's, that doesn't take away that exposure. It still exists.
Let's go to the live line. Jim Kelly has called us at 790-2040. Jim, go ahead. You're with Kathy Winger.
Hi, Kathy. Kathy, I'm wondering if you could tell people what MFA is, VPN, PKI, and if there are ways to personally, like encrypt your emails, encrypt your transactions online, whether it be with Amazon or anybody else, so you could lock down your computer and it not be hacked. Are there personal ways that can happen?
Hi, Jim. Thanks for that question. And there are. And the different acronyms that you named, some of them I'm familiar with, some of them I'm not. VPN is, I believe, a virtual and network provider that you can set up on your own and you can use personally. The other acronyms that you mentioned, I would suspect, are something similar to that. But I think your question about what you can do personally in terms of protecting information is a good one, and I think it makes sense in light of what I just talked about, the expectation that businesses will protect it too. There are things that you can do. There are sort of best practices for individuals. In terms of personally encrypting your information, I'm not familiar with whether individuals are capable of doing that, and I haven't ever seen anything that imposes that expectation on them. So that, I think, is a little extreme for individuals. Businesses, on the other hand, a best practice is encrypting information, and that's pretty standard. And so when their practices are examined because there's been a breach or something has come up, that's going to be one of the things that's looked at, whether or not they did encrypt information. But for individuals, one of the things that I like to point out to people, because this is something that and I'll admit here that I'm guilty of it too at times, but I try to be less so. But this is something that I think a lot of people do that is really not recommended, and that's using public internet, going to Starbucks and using their internet. That's not viewed as safe.
Right. And
I saw a speaker. I spoke at a conference in Las Vegas in May, and the keynote speaker was a woman who was the chief information officer under President Bush in the White House, and she compared public Wi-Fi to a dirty toothbrush on the ground.
Mm.
And she said, would you think of picking up a dirty toothbrush from the ground and putting it in your mouth and brushing your teeth with it? And of course, everyone in the audience was horrified
cringing,
by
yeah.
that idea. And then she said, that's what you're doing if you use public internet.
Right.
And so I thought that was an interesting analogy, and it really brought the point home, because, I think most of us in the audience before had used it. So I think that's one thing that people can do. And then the other thing that I like to focus on, I focus on this with my businesses and with individuals, is to be aware of who you're sharing information with.
Mm-hmm.
When you're getting emails and they're asking for information, personally identifiable information like social security numbers, bank accounts, things like that, don't share it. Don't share it willy-nilly. Confirm with an organization that it's the actual organization that you're sharing it with, and that they want the information. Because I think many people run into problems in that area, and it's really just a matter of awareness. Just thinking, look at information and your personal information as something that you need to protect, and you need to take steps to protect it. And I think if people do that, a lot of it are common sense type things that you can do to keep it safe.
All right. Kathy Winger sticks around for another segment, 790-2040. If you have any questions about cybersecurity and protecting yourself, now would be the time to call in. We're going to take our break right here on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be right back. Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. Thanks to Green Things for their support of our program. They took 4 acres, Jan and Jack, the owners, and they've expanded it to 13, and it's a beautiful location along the Rito Riverwalk, 3384 East River Road, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's a destination for gardeners in itself, and they've got these free workshops. The free schedule of the free workshops is available at greenthingsaz.com. Check that out. And stop by. So if you need any kind of gardening supplies, now that the rains have come, things looking better in the garden, I know I'm thinking about fall planting, need some roses, and I need some geraniums. So I'll be paying a visit very soon to Green Things. Kathy Winger is with us. Kathy is a Tucson-based attorney. We always love having her on the program. We talk about an issue that really concerns a lot of people, and that's nobody wants their identity stolen through the computer and the whole thing with cybersecurity. And Kathy, we were talking a little bit about ways to protect yourself. One area is if it doesn't look right, do not open an attachment.
Absolutely. That's very good advice, Bill, and it's so true. And it really applies to individuals in their personal worlds and also in the business world, because a huge majority of people or companies that suffer breaches are their employees opening emails that they shouldn't have. So you want to always look at where it's coming, not from the name of the person, but the actual site.
Because so you're talking about employees that at work,
absolutely,
who open something suspicious, and it puts the whole company at risk.
That's right. It gets into the whole company's system. And I heard, you know, a perfect example. One of the things I talk about and I encourage for business owners is training their employees on this. Mm-hmm. Because really, their employees are the first line of defense. If you can have someone who's a receptionist open an email and your whole company system goes
suddenly
down.
Suddenly everybody's exposed.
Exactly. So training and understanding and being careful is just so critically important. And the emails are so deceptive. I've come close myself to opening ones that I shouldn't have opened. But because it looks like it's from someone that I know, it looks like it belongs to me, that someone should have sent it. It's only by looking at the source that I realized, hey, you know, there's something funky going on here. And there are some emails that come out that you don't even need to open them. Just taking your mouse over them, the virus can come in through that way. So it is just hugely important to do that. And that's really the human equivalent, or the human factor, excuse me.
Another question for you, Kathy.
Yeah.
Andy is on the live line. Go ahead, Andy. We're with Kathy Winger.
Thanks, Bill. So, Kathy, I'm not very computer savvy myself or anything like that, but I do use a debit card sometimes around at the stores, and so like Target or something. And so, you know, Target got hacked into, and they find a way back to your bank. But my question is, you hear about these companies, and I guess LifeLock is the most well-known, how they can profess to protect your information and so forth. Wouldn't you think that, I'm sure the banks have some sort of a protection, but if companies are out there that can protect your identity, wouldn't the banks, I mean, aren't they responsible, and shouldn't they have some firewall to that's at least as good as an independent company?
Well, yes, that's true. They are on the hook, and they do have protections that are built in. And the way that the laws are set up, you know, the consumers have the most protection. So banks, you know, if there are fraudulent charges, if there are data breaches, the obligation is on them to replace the cards, to issue new cards, and the fraud losses are on go to the banks under the Truth in Lending Act.
They're kept to a real minimum.
Absolutely, it's the
$50
fraud loss. Yes, so there is that protection out there. The companies that offer the protection for a fee, they generally are geared towards consumers and to provide consumers with help and support in the event event there is a data breach or there is a fraud loss. So there is some value to those companies. I'm not going to say one way or the other whether I recommend them or not.
Right, right.
But that's really what they do. But the consumers in this area have the most protection. However, it's still a hassle if your credit card information is stolen, if your Social Security number is stolen, even though your exposure's not there, it can be a pain in the neck to get it all straightened out. You need to know how it's being used. So it still does cause problems for consumers, but ultimately it's the burden is on the companies like the banks. Target got into a lot of trouble for that breach, and they now have sort of top of the line security and data security as a result of the losses that they suffered. So you're right in that the companies bear the loss, but it still can be a hassle for individuals, and I think that's where the services arise from, helping individuals deal with that hassle if they feel like they need it.
Kathy, the time just goes so fast.
I know. I can't believe
you back
it.
Again
I know.
Soon here. Where can people find you if they'd like you to speak to their group?
Absolutely. My telephone number is 520-391-4475. I can be reached at email at Kathy@kdwinger.com. And my offices are here in Tucson, Arizona.
Okay. Kathy, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure having you on the program, and we'll have you back very soon. Thanks
thank
a lot.
You.
All right. Coming up this afternoon, Mic Check with Mike Shaw from 4 to 5, then Wake Up Tucson tomorrow morning, 6 to 9, me, Buckmaster, back with you with our Friday Focus interview with Congressman O'Halloran tomorrow at 12:04. On behalf of Bob on the other side of the glass, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon and evening.